Our next speaker is Richard Bouris, who you heard an introduction of him before. He's a social psychologist and works a lot on intercultural communication.
No PowerPoint.
Bonjour, tous et toutes. Je vais faire.
Good morning. I will be making my presentation in English.
The theme developed by Antonia Maloney last evening and Lawrence Vermeer this morning. So my comments deal with political realities and myths of linguistic barriers in healthcare. And to do this, I'm going to use the concept of ethno-linguistic vitality that I've been involved with for a number of years and that have been adopted by different governments, including the Canadian government, over the years. So the notion of group vitality provides a conceptual tool to analyze the socio-structural variables that affect the strength of language communities within multilingual societies. The vitality of a language community is defined as that which makes a group likely to behave as a distinctive and active collective entity in multilingual societies. The vitality of linguistic communities is related to, in fact, a question of degree, and it's always in terms of comparison, the vitality of one community relative to another one, usually in minority-majority situations. So the more vitality a language community enjoys, the more likely it is that it will survive and thrive as a collective entity. Conversely, language communities that have little or low vitality are more likely to eventually cease to exist as distinctive language groups. We apply vitality framework to Francophone, Anglophone communities across Canada, ethno-linguistic communities in different cities across Canada and the world, and of course, First Nations. We've looked at the wellness and illness of high and low vitality ethno-linguistic minorities in different settings, always in comparative framework. We have three pillars of community vitality. We have demographic factors, institutional support, and status factors. So we use those three dimensions. Each factor combines to contribute to the strong, moderate, or weak vitality of language minorities. So, for example, a minority with a strong demographic vitality can more easily develop and legitimize a strong institutional vitality than a minority with a declining vitality on the demographic front. So, numbers in democratic societies have an impact on the amount of institutional support you are granted from the dominant majority. One assumption, of course, is that healthy vitality minorities contribute to pluralism, creativity, and productivity within multilingual societies. So it's an asset rather than a problem. So we have these three pillars. So demographic factors relate to the sheer number of speakers of a particular community, their absolute numbers, their birth rate, their age pyramid, immigration, emigration, intergenerational transmission. Also has to do with concentration, how many of that linguistic minority you have in a particular urban environment, in a particular region of the province, an economic region of the province, or in the whole country. So you can define it. So of course, if we apply this notion of just demographic vitality, well, we know that, for example, the English mother tongue population of Quebec dropped from 13% of the population to 8% of the population between 1971 and 2008, whereas cultural or allophone communities, they increased from 6.3% in 71 to almost 12% in 2006. And the Francophone dominant majority has been steady at 80% of the Quebec population. So we use numbers, we look at numbers with a demographic vitality. And of course we've had the exodus of Anglophones over the years following various political events in Quebec. Now, I was just thinking, well, what are the strong institutional vitality elements of the English-speaking communities of Quebec. Well, in the decreasing order of strength, we start with hospital and healthcare, which is the top dog of the institutional vitality of the English-speaking communities of Quebec. It's high status, it's relatively well-funded by the federal government and somewhat by the provincial government. Then you have universities and CGEPs that are very strong in terms of vitality, in terms of institutional vitality. You have primary and secondary schools and school boards. You have 9 out of 69 school boards that are English school boards. However, there's a drop from 256,000 students in the English school system in 1971 to only about 119,000 students by 2007, and that's a 53% drop. There's not a lot of school systems in North America that have dropped by 50% in such a small amount of time. So, you know, that has an impact on the general vitality of the English-speaking communities of Quebec. You also have social services, business, industry, and finance, also in decline. Local mass media, TV, that's another domain. Art, culture, sports, and leisure, bilingual status municipalities. What we find, when I look at it, is that English-speaking institutions often work in silos across these different dimensions of vitality, of institutional vitality. Whereas what we know is it's a combination of these English-speaking institutions working together that contributes most to the vitality of the English-speaking communities. And of course, the more vitality English-speaking communities have, the more it creates a pluralistic environment, which also gives headroom for allophone and cultural communities within the Quebec context. We find that these English-speaking institutions tend to work independently of each other, again, with this idea of the silos. Yet, each of these institutions are vulnerable to Quebec language laws favoring French over English institutions. So in the vitality framework, we not only have demographics, institutional support and control, but also the status of the cultural communities, including Anglophones. And a lot of that status is related to the language laws that govern their existence. So we have the legal status of English relative to French as a drop following 11 language laws designed to increase the status of French relative to English in Quebec since the early 1970s. So 11 laws have been having an impact here. Legally, the Charter of the French Language, Bill 101, increased the institutional vitality of the Quebecois French majority. Legally, Bill 101 reduced the institutional vitality of the English-speaking communities of Quebec. So if you look at Bill 101, just a few headlines, a few features of the law. French is the only official language of Quebec. French is the language of work in all business firms with more than 50 employees. French is compulsory language of primary and secondary schooling for all French mother tongue pupils and international immigrants. Yes, Quebec Anglophones and siblings have the right to English schooling if one parent received most of the schooling in English in Quebec. That's protected by Article 23 of the Canadian Constitution. Quebec provincial administration and all ministries must provide all services in French to all citizens and organizations. Individual citizens may receive services in English upon request as individuals, but organizations and firms can only communicate and receive services in French with the Quebec government ministries. These are limitations. Quebec government has full jurisdiction over municipalities. All municipalities must provide services in French to its citizens. Most municipalities in Quebec have French-only status, and they're not allowed to serve their citizens in a language other than French. Some municipalities have granted bilingual status if they have 51% of the population that has English as a mother tongue. Limitations again. Health and social services. All hospitals and social services must provide French language services in Quebec population. For some hospitals and social services are allowed to provide services in English in recognized and designated bilingual status institutions. Nevertheless, in those institutions, French must predominate. Designated status of hospitals and social services are based on the local mother tongue or first official language of the population as of the last census, and based on the historical antecedents of the institutions. The bilingual status of institutions are revised every 3 years. In 2010, 42 health and social service institutions had recognized designated bilingual status in Quebec, of which 28 were in Montreal. 9 out of 16 Quebec region had at least one designated bilingual institution. Yep. Here's the way these bilingual institutions are named, you know, are defined. Un établissement reconnu.
An institution with bilingual is recognized where it provides its services in a language other than French, and that has obtained from the Office Québécois de la Langue Française an official recognition under Article 29.1 of the Charter of French Language.
Document in 2006. Designated bilingual health and social service institutions have the following official definition. Un établissement.
An institution designated is an institution that the government designates among its recognized institutions. It is an institution that can make available in English to the English-speaking population health and social services that they provide.
Show how the Quebecois Francophone dominant majority controls the legal status of English-speaking institutions in Quebec. Clearly, Bill 101 and other language laws, including Bill 14, are designed to erode the institutional vitality of English-speaking institutions of Quebec at some point in time, and this has been going on for a while. When proposed Quebec laws undermine the institutional vitality of one sector, such as bilingual municipalities, other English institutions, including health and social services, should mobilize to defend the vulnerable institution singled out by the Quebec government law of the day. If English-speaking institutions keep on working in silos, each institution will be eroded one by one by Quebec government laws over the long term. Health and social services may be spared in this law, but may be undermined in the next language law. And you don't know when that's coming. The English-speaking communities of Quebec need horizontal, intersectorial solidarity and mobilization to resist the erosion of institutional vitality by different language laws and decrees. If it is the English-speaking communities who are best mobilized collectively with the strongest leadership who can best resist the erosion of their institutions in their particular region, but they need the support of these different institutions within the English-speaking communities of Quebec to better resist such developments. So the take-home message is simply that English-speaking communities must work horizontally in the various strengths of their institutional vitality sectors to work in solidarity. Because alone, each can be weakened if there's no mobilization from other strong sectors of the English-speaking community institutions. So, in a way, I think that I can stop right here. It's just sort of a note of caution. We're going to publish a book called Déclin et enjeux des communautés de langue anglaise au Québec. So, that will be published by Canadian Heritage. So it's in French and in English. And that will come out somewhere in April or May of this year. And we do actually discuss some of these issues in this volume. Thank you very much.
We have time for a few questions.
Yes, bonjour.
So I have two questions that are also comments. The one on, I came in a bit late, so I'm sorry, but I think this, the way that you kind of illustrate for us some of the problems in terms of silos is very important. And so, for example, this question of silos among these institutions affecting their vitality is something that you clearly see in Quebec. We have a community networks now, the English Language Community Network. They should be here, by the way, but anyway. But this is the kind of thing, if you can get those cross-cutting. This is something that we see in Francophone communities across Canada. Is part of their vitality is that their institutions are much more integrated, or there's much more of a sense of community among the different kinds of institutions. Yeah. So that's a learning from Francophone communities mm-hmm. that have, we can talk about how robust they are, but at least in terms of their vitality seem to be. But the other, I think, challenge for English language institutions is this way, in this way, is that the silos are, themselves can't be siloed off from the Francophone community. So especially in hospitals, in healthcare services, in the arts, these are kind of areas in which there needs to be that interface between the two language communities. Yeah. So part of the vitality of the English language community is the extent to which it can have that interface with the more general, yes. larger community as a whole.
What we find is that the bottom up is, for example, health and social welfare people, whether they're French, English, or allophone, they share a lot in common, and they do collaborate, you know, bottom up. Problem is these things that come up from top down, from ideological concerns of different political parties, and they kind of put a spanner into these, you know, quite convivial relations at the front line of social services, healthcare, you know, municipalities. So you have municipalities now, Francophone municipalities, who have said vis-a-vis Bill 14, and say, we are going to keep the bilingual status of our arrondissement for our minority arrondissement with Anglophone minorities in it. So that's a bottom-up resistance to a top-down provision by, you know, a particular government. But the point is, when you look at the laws, you know, it's all based on the tolerance of the dominant majority towards all of its linguistic and cultural minorities, including the English-speaking communities of Quebec. So that's the context. I didn't talk about the federal conundrum about all this, but basically Bill 101, you know, had quite an impact in eroding the separatist cause in Quebec, and the federal government is forever happy that thanks to Bill 101, you know, Canada was saved in a sense. So federal government is in a difficulty in involving itself in overtly supporting the English-speaking communities of Quebec, because they get trashed a little bit from the nationalist point of view. So that is a very delicate equilibrium, whereas in the rest of Canada, the federal government can openly help the Francophone minorities with no damage in terms of voting from either the Anglophones, Allophones, or Francophones. So, you know, Quebec is a dangerous place, but at the same time, it's quite interesting.